Less than a week before the UN climate conference opens in Glasgow, Britain has unveiled proposals for a climate finance plan to break the impasse between developed and developing countries. Britain, along with Germany and Canada, have drawn up the plan to help the world's poorest countries cut their emissions and adapt to climate change. But the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, admits success at the summit is by no means guaranteed.
It's going to be very, very tough, this summit. And I'm very worried because it might go wrong, and we might not get the agreements that we need. And it's touch and go.
That's British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Tensions over climate finance have threatened to derail COP26 after July's G7 summit failed to produce specific plans for climate funding. Rachel Kite is a member of the UN Secretary-General's High-Level Advisory Group on Climate Action and an advisor to the British government for the COP26 talk. She joins us from the UK. Rachel Kite, welcome to Breakfast.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
What are the climate finance proposals the British government's revealed for developing nations at COP26?
So cast our minds back to 2009, and developed countries promised that they would provide $100 billion of climate finance by 2020, and then every year after that. That was revised in 2015 at the Paris Agreement. And we find ourselves in 2021, and that number has not been realised, leading to lots of mistrust from the developing world about promises made and promises not kept. And so the UK, as the president of the talks, asked Canada and Germany in the Northern Hemisphere to start working to try to get a package together. Today, they've unveiled a process where they hope it's more transparent so people can see what is actually flowing and not from whom. But they're basically saying that they won't reach that 100 billion target until probably about 2023. And then from 2023 to 2025, there will be 100 billion a year. They're trying to take the edge off that by saying that in total between now and 2025, you will get to 500 billion. So it sort of all comes out in the wash, but I think this is going to land with a small thud.
Who is not paying their way, basically? Which of the wealthy nations?
Well, nobody's really excelling. There's been some very interesting analysis done by different think tanks and different NGOs about, you know, what is the fair share that developed countries should be paying based on, you know, the damage that they do by their own footprint, and then how wealthy they are as countries. And basically everybody comes out as not really doing enough. In the United States, I think, has the biggest distance still to travel. Obviously, under the Trump administration, the US wasn't coming forward with any real climate finance. So there's room for everybody to improve, and the OECD is tracking this finance. But you know, it's way beyond the 100 billion. I mean, we should be at COP26 really talking about the stepped up package that we need for 2025 and beyond, because we're experiencing the impacts of climate so severely already. So everybody has to do more, including Australia. And then we really need to start talking about what we're going to do above and beyond 100 billion.
The US is objecting to the plan, as I understand it, to make up the shortfalls of the past year, you know, to add on in these last couple of years to make up the shortfall. So they're not on board at this point. I think I'm right in recollecting that Australia at the time of Paris, the Australian government at that time said it was not going to contribute, but it was going to contribute to a Pacific fund. So countries are sort of making up their way as they go along to get close to this, but not close enough. What does this mean for developing countries? Indonesia and Bangladesh, for instance, are on the record of saying they just can't afford to step up to their climate pledges unless they get funding from the developed world to help them develop their adaptation and resilience. That's what they're going for.
So this announcement today was an attempt by the British to sort of have a little bit more transparency and have everybody talking apples to apples, oranges to oranges, because you're right, countries have been sort of grasping at different ways of making the accounting all add up. And this isn't washing with developing countries. And the Climate Vulnerable Forum, the most vulnerable countries chaired by Bangladesh, came out with a very, very strong statement just a couple of weeks ago saying, look, we have to have a different mindset around finance. And it kind of undercuts the entire discussion, because whether we're talking about mitigation, so reducing emissions, or whether we're talking about adapting to emission, to the impacts of climate change, or if we're talking about
that's what
about
this money is for,
damage,
both those things.
Yeah.
So this fund is for both reducing emissions and protection against climate impact.
Right. And then there will also need to be a conversation about how do we finance what we call loss and damage, and that in other language would be called reparations. How do we fund those countries that did nothing to get to this point of human history but are suffering the worst? So that's an even further financial discussion. So we're entering into Glasgow with low social trust between the developing and developed world. This is a good faith effort to try to get the conversation going in a more productive way, but it's going to be regarded as not enough, I think, by many countries.
Well, you heard Boris Johnson there at the start saying it's going to be very tough. He's very worried. It might go wrong. It's touch and go. Is a successful COP26 dependent on progress on this finance agenda? Is it as clear as that?
Well, I mean, that was expectation management. Finance has been at the heart of COP26 from the very beginning. And at the beginning of this year, climate development ministers met in London in March. Then there was the Biden summit just after that. Then there was a G7, and then there's a G20, and there's another G20 at the end of this week. And at each one of these moments, the developing world is saying, you do not come through with the resources that we need for this emergency. And so we'll arrive in Glasgow with, I think, some very difficult negotiations ahead of us. There can be lots of things to look forward to. There are lots of new ways of mobilizing private finance. But at the end of the day, there have to be transfers of public finance from the north to the south. And those are not going, they're not in large enough amounts, and they're not flowing quickly enough.
And bottom line is, without that, all those developing countries will just keep on emitting. And that's what will undercut the success, ultimately, of this agreement, the impact of the agreement.
Well, it's not quite so cut and dried. The poorest countries absolutely need these funds for essential work to build their resilience. Most countries are coming forward with their plans now, and these plans are about investing their own domestic resources. These are about attracting private investment. Private investment has a preference now for the green economy over the brown. And so it's not that this $100 billion is going to be the difference between achieving your own green growth trajectory or not. But this is a political promise. It's about burden sharing, and it's also very important for the poorest countries.
Rachel Kite, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Rachel Kite is a member of the UN Secretary General's High-Level Advisory Group on Climate Action and an advisor to the British government for the COP26 talks. And as she described it herself there, that quote from Boris Johnson is about expectations management. Sounds like Boris Johnson is trying to manage those expectations down, perhaps, from next week's important climate conference.